everybody. Welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope. Glad you could be with us this week. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. My special guest today is Craig Wiener. Craig is a psychologist. He's also an author, and he deals with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and how parents can work with children that have that. And you might say, well, how is that apropos or on topic for this program? Well, I'll tell you how it is. When you come home from incarceration and you're in the role of a parent, you very well could have a child that has these issues. And that's why we're doing this show today. We're going to be talking with Craig Wiener. Right after this, I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Hey, love to get those emails. MathersRodney@yahoo.com. MathersRodney@yahoo.com. Hey, everybody, and welcome back. My guest today is Craig Wiener. Craig is a psychologist and an author, and we're going to talk to Craig today about his latest book, Parenting Your Child with ADHD, a no-nonsense guide for nurturing self-reliance and cooperation. Wow, it's a long title, Craig.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Journey of Hope, sir.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
You know, I feel like having raised children myself and having grandchildren now, that there just seems to be like this. And by the way, in my past life, I was a school teacher for 16 years, and it just seems like there's like this proliferation of kids being diagnosed with ADHD. And even though this podcast is really geared towards ex-offenders reentry, I feel like there's probably going to be some ex-offenders coming home that are going to come into situations where they're going to be put into the role of a parent of a child who's got this diagnosis. So I felt like this show was probably on topic, even though it may not sound like it. But hey, listen, first of all, the ADHD, it stands for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Didn't it used to just be ADD? When did that change?
Well, ADD is now just attention deficit disorder without the hyperactivity.
Okay. Now,
so some people just do the lack of attention behaviors rather than the hyper behaviors.
Is it overdiagnosed?
ADD, yeah. There's a whole group of people that never did all this rambunctious limit testing, attention getting stuff.
Okay.
They were more avoidant, very avoidant, just lack of participation, lack of contribution, avoidant, spaced out, not really reacting very efficiently to the things that other people say and do. Mm-hmm. Just kind of distanced from the world.
And that's different than putting the hyperactivity in it? That's different than the ADHD, or?
Well, I think it's very different, because if you get a kid right from the beginning that's just disconnected, that's a different problem to get them to learn to respond more efficiently to the world, more eagerly to the world. The ADHD group is an initial group of kids who were really they were evoking a lot of attention from the people around them. They were not really wanting to hear the word no. They didn't want the limit. They wanted to monopolize the mother or provoke the mother into responding to them. So the whole seeking of contact and wanting things is different than this kind of disconnecting behavior.
Okay. what is the earliest age you can start to see these kinds of behaviors?
Well, since I view the whole thing as behaviors and not as something budding from the embryo, I think that you can see this very early on, especially when the child starts learning to walk. You get kids that very early, how a parent manages through the toddler stage is really important. Like all the, think about a two-year-old who's mobile or a one-and-a-half-year-old who's mobile, and parents bring them to a place, and then immediately the parents start talking to each other, and the kid knows what to do, what right from the word go. They learn what is in the room that they can go touch that will get the parent to have to deal with them.
Hmm. Interesting. So toddler age would be the earliest you could see it, and this is not something that's innate. It's a learned problem, right?
Well, this is what I try to help people understand. Well, it's not ADHD when the kid's doing that. I'm saying that these are behaviors. How that's managed will help decide how the kid learns to engage with others or control the agenda, what's happening. But so managing that very early on can help prevent the child from eventually doing all the other behaviors that qualify for a diagnosis much later on, years later.
Okay.
But the point of the whether it's innate or learned, about half of the kids who end up with a diagnosis have all sorts of other problems like learning problems, motor problems, health problems, language problems. So these are kids that from the word go were more difficult to socialize. They required more accommodation by the parent, more protection by the parent, more catering to, more involvement. So some kids, some baby negative infant temperament, some kids are more difficult to socialize, and it's the starting place will increase the probability that the child will eventually learn these intrusive behaviors and avoidant behaviors and desperate behaviors that go with the diagnosis.
Okay.
There's no medical category that goes with the diagnosis. There's no gene. There's no dysfunction that says if you have this gene or you have this dysfunction, we know you're going to be diagnosed with ADHD. ADHD is just a list of behaviors. They're essentially intrusive behaviors, avoidant behaviors, and they call them pulsive. I say just desperate behaviors. And these are things that kids get conditioned to do over time based on circumstance.
Would neglect be a circumstance?
Well, yeah, sure. Depressed moms will increase your probability of a child learning to make a lot of noise and disrupt just to get the parent to unearth the parent. But you can have ADHD behaviors get patterned in from a parent that's doing all this managing in the family, helicoptering, so the kid doesn't learn to self-manage, so the kid's so reliant on somebody else to cue. You get it from the exact opposite, which is an indifferent parent where there's limits aren't being set. There's no parent type, because no matter what the parent's doing, it depends on the kid, what the kid also learns. What you learn has to do with your biology, your physiological state.
Okay.
It's not just parents. They won't always say, well, parents don't cause ADHD. Well, parents don't cause anything. A parent, it's always an issue of sometimes parents are alcoholic parents. You get a kid who's super parentified. You get a kid who copies the alcohol behaviors. You get another kid that's doing something totally different. The same parents. Mm-hmm. So you can't just say parents do this. It's that these patterns can evolve under a range of conditions.
Okay.
And I help people recognize all the conditions that these behaviors occur in.
Okay, we're going to get to that in just a second, and we're going to talk more about what your book is about. But I want to focus in for just a minute. You talked about socializing types of behaviors. Let's take, for example, a three-year-old. What kinds of behaviors in a social setting, the way that a three-year-old interacts with other toddlers and so forth, would be an indicator that there were some socializing problems? Because, I mean, all toddlers, you know, don't they kind of push on each other and whack each other and maybe even bite or something? So what would be specifically what you were looking for in a child that wasn't properly socializing at, say, the age of three?
Yeah, so you say, what are the normative behaviors for most kids at three? How much?
That's what I was trying to say.
That's right. And so that you get some kid that looks atypical, which is they're either too aggressive or they and not learning to do any sharing or coordinating at all that's age consistent.
Okay.
Most 3-year-olds may not do that much cooperative play, but they may learn to respond to a directive to come over here and do this particular thing. And what accounts for somebody not responding to an attempt to direct their actions? And how does somebody get conditioned not to respond to a direction? I said, come over here, I have an ice cream cone. I might get the kid to come. I say, come over here, you have to give me what you just picked up. The kid may not respond very differently. So okay. The problem's going to be, that's what people don't recognize, that they say a diagnosis of ADHD, they don't follow directions. Well, they don't follow some directions, sometimes. They do other times. So it's always an issue of looking for what the pattern is for this child. Okay. What they're learning to do.
Okay, so how's it diagnosed?
There's a list of behaviors that if you do them often and frequently and you get enough times the parent and the teacher say they do it often and frequently and this is the age and this is how the norm for the age about doing these behaviors, then you get a diagnosis that implies you have a neurological delay, yet it's just a list of behaviors. The list of behaviors don't tell you why you do what you do.
Right.
Basically the psychiatric and neurological community decides that they have the explanation, which is it resonates in your body. That's why you do it. And I'm saying that they don't have any. They don't make a very good case for that because they've never had anything biological that they can say point to. This is it, like diabetes.
Okay. Okay. I know that, do they use the DSM? We've talked about that test here on the show before. Is that what is used for a diagnosis, and can it be used with a toddler, or does the child have to be, you know, first or second grade before they could actually get a diagnosis?
You can now, with the DSM-5, you can go to, it used to be age 7, I think now it's, it could be 4.
Okay.
So the problem is, like you're saying, what social behaviors do we expect of a 3-year-old in terms of compliance and cooperating with others? Mm-hmm. Is a very limit, and how hyper are any kids, because they're active, and it's only over time they learn to be when to be active, when they're not allowed to be active.
Right.
And socializing a kid is just about giving up ADHD behaviors. Everybody's doing intrusive behaviors, avoidant behaviors as kids. They don't respond. They don't know what it is that's expected. They don't have any expectations. A baby has no expectations. An infant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And okay, so here's what I want to do. I want to take a quick break. And when we come back, Craig, I want to talk about the role of the parents and all this and the kinds of things you address in your book. We're going to take a quick break, back with Craig Wiener right after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on The Journey of Hope. Remember now, you can always catch me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com. That's mathersrodney at yahoo.com.
Everyone knows that the cold wind blows and the concrete's harder when the sun grows. Gonna get a visit at a 2-hour limit. Big roll of quarters, please don't forget it. Worked all night in the kitchen, stealing chicken in the kitchen. That bar ain't doing what he ought to sleep down, motherfucker. Mexican mafia.
We're back. We're talking with Craig Wiener. Craig's got a book called Parenting Your Child with ADHD, A No-Nonsense Guide for Nurturing Self-Reliance and Cooperation. And, okay, the parents that that are parenting children that are exhibiting these kinds of behaviors, it's your premise that the parents can intervene in such a way that they can eliminate these behaviors, right?
So if you take the view that these behaviors increase in frequency if they get reinforcement, which is if the kid is loud and makes a ruckus and the parent gets up and stops what they're doing and gets attention to the kid, or the parent leaves the antique store because the kid's acting up, then the kid learns to do those behaviors again in those situations. If the kid learns to fuss and overreact and the parent gives them what they want, or if the kid encounters difficulty, failure, or situations that are uncomfortable for them, and they learn to not respond, that's the way all of us use avoidance as a way to deal with the world.
Right.
Then these behaviors get reinforced. It's not just the parent would be involved with the reinforcements. These behaviors get reinforced. If you're wanting something and you don't want to miss out, you're going to do more desperate behaviors. You're going to push ahead. You're going to go quickly. You're going to do something that might make an error, but you're so afraid you're going to miss out. Your behavior changes when you are in a desperate state. So if you get it and desperation gets you what you want, then you learn to do those behaviors again. So the problem for the parent is how, to what extent they can participate in changing what gets reinforced over time with the child. And ultimately, if you can train the child, many people feel like ADHD is a delay in being able to self-manage. Mm-hmm. So if the parent can help the child learn to self-manage without them being involved, without the parent being involved, the child will learn more self-reliance. And then if you can help the child cooperate, which is to respond to expectations and limits and to care about others, then you're not going to see ADHD behaviors, which are really often very difficult for other people because they're intrusive and disruptive.
Right.
So the parent has to train in alternatives. But if you assume the child is defective, then like they do in traditional ADHD intervention, then you do things like you have to control the child more, or you only have an option of sedating the child with stimulant medications, which would just get them to focus more intensely on certain activities, and then they're not as likely to be active and disruptive because your brain state changes when you take certain medications. Right. There's lots of other ways to get these behaviors to change.
Okay, and so I'm assuming that that you're saying that the medication is not the route to go. It's the parent's interaction with the child.
Well, you can do the medication, but the problem with the medication is going to be that it works for a while for everybody or 80% of the people, but then it stops doing such an effective job after 3, 4, 5, 6 years. That's what the studies are showing.
Huh.
Plus, with any medication, even if the side effects are a certain amount when you take it for a short period of time, what's the consequences of longer-term usage of any medication?
Mm-hmm. And those are pretty heavy-duty meds, the Adderall and the, I don't know if they still do Ritalin, but those medications are not light on the system, are they?
Let's say that people that want to sell them and people that want to advise parents to use these medications, they say that they don't have data that says you have to worry about problems. There's all sorts of animal studies that say there's problems, but you know, when you look at the literature, it's like every time you see one study says this is a problem, another study comes back and says it's not a problem. So the parent is left with the concern of what to do. Because there's no definitive research that says they didn't know about the birth control pill changing a woman's sex drive because he had to use it for 20 years before it had that effect.
Right. Okay.
So they don't know what happens when you start somebody on 4, 5 years, 6 years old. The New York Times just said there's 10,000 kids in this country, toddlers, on ADHD meds. Toddlers.
Oh. Wow.
So what are the consequences to the developing brain because they... It changes the patterns of dopamine. So you have more dopamine in the brain. And you don't know what that ends up doing.
Right.
So then how do you? They know it's. They now have a study that said it correlated with increased obesity. if you have these meds as a kid and then you're off them as an adult, you have more obesity. Because it's also just things that I don't want to scare people. You can use these meds and you can get an urgent problem to correct itself in the short term. Like parents get threatened by the teachers that the kid's going to have to go into a behavior disorder classroom if they don't settle down. So sometimes the situation is desperate and parents have, and all the medical providers are encouraging parents to put the kid on meds, and they do. Mm-hmm. But what happens is they say, well, you can put a kid on meds and you can also do psychological intervention. But what I find is that when the problem settles down with the meds, that people really don't really work quite as hard on the psychology because the problem is at bay for a while.
Right.
So it's not as if you get this huge number of people doing meds and therapy.
Let's talk a little bit about, we're getting close on time here. This is a fascinating discussion. Let's say we have a school-age child, first or second grade, that has ADHD. What are some things that a parent can do to help manage the behavior when the child is gone at school all day?
So, like you're saying, that the parent has limited time to influence the child once they're school age.
Exactly.
Okay.
You say things much better than I do, Craig. You ought to get a show, dude.
Yeah. They have even less influence when the kid's a teenager because you won't even see them.
Right.
Okay. So you really want to get. That's why I think you want to start as early as possible. So, and then with parents working, nobody has time until supper time, and then it's like homework and hassling about the next day, and everybody's so busy with fitting in time together and all those scheduled activities that who has time to even connect as relationships. So what I try to get parents to recognize is that discipline a child is you're socializing them, but you're also helping them learn how to have a relationship that's mutually acceptable. Mm-hmm. How to give and take, how to take other people's perspectives, how to show sharing, turn-taking. And if you try to just control your child or threaten your child, you can sometimes get compliance because the child's afraid of the consequences, but you're probably not going to get the child to learn how to care without the notion of being afraid. So when you're not around to induce the fear, you may not get the behavior to repeat as often as if you can get the child to see that this is a nice way for the child to behave for themselves, because your life becomes richer and more interesting if they develop some skills that might have to do with school skills or other kinds of helping run the family. You want to get a kid to buy into the what's expected and wanted. It's just like, you know how they send executives to these training places learn how to work with their employees in a constructive way so the employee feels part of a team and wants to work with the company to promote the company?
Right.
It's the same. My book is essentially helping parents learn these skills that have been out for years and years on how to get people to achieve and work as a team. And it's not about controlling a child. It's about getting a child to buy into the notion of what we want the child to be doing and what we think is best for relationships and how people can take care of each other.
So I think what I hear you saying is that we need to teach those children empathy, and that in turn will help with the condition. Is that what I'm hearing?
Very much so. So the problem with the ADHD is the meds aren't going to do that, and those behavior charts and sitting kids in timeout chairs and taking things away and giving rewards doesn't really teach a kid to do things because it has to do with that's what's nice in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about you're going to get something because you did it. You're going to get connection with somebody. You're going to do something kind. You're going to have a richer life because you have people in your life that care about you and you care about them. And there's a way for parents to learn to do this, and it's just unfortunate that the ADHD group gets kind of channeled into some other pattern of socialization because there's a presumption that they have some neurological delay that prevents them from ever being able to self-control or manage anything. So it's almost like you drop that goal, and you just assume that they've got to be monitored more, controlled more, cued more, So they become almost more dependent on all these people directing and monitoring their actions rather than the opposite, which is how do you get them to learn to be more independent, self-reliant?
Mm-hmm. Craig, the book is called Parenting Your Child with ADHD, a no-nonsense guide for nurturing self-reliance and cooperation. I could just keep going with this with you. It's a fascinating discussion. How do we get the book?
Well, I have a website, craigwiener.com, C-R-A-I-G-W-I-E-N-E-R, and you can, there's links to all the major booksellers. Barnes & Noble has a copy in every store around the country. And you can, go on Amazon and all the major booksellers on the Internet and get a copy. So it's all over. You just have to go on the Internet, type in my name and the Parenting Your Child with ADHD, Craig Wiener, and you can get access to the book.
Excellent.
And it's not as easy as controlling your child, but I think the long-term outcome is better because you create a human being rather than somebody that's just dealing with the anxiety of somebody else controlling them.
I like the premise of your book, Craig. It sounds really cool. I want to encourage people to go out there and try to find it. Craig, thank you so much for being on the Journey of Hope today.
Oh, thanks for having me. My pleasure.
We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Hey, y'all, coming up in the next few weeks, Linda Crowder, Chris Sprague, we've got Scott Stevens, we've got Joe Nunziata, all coming up soon on the Journey of Hope. And remember, this is a program for ex-offenders, so if you know someone who would benefit for the program, whether it be family, friends, loved ones, or the ex-offender themselves, be sure and tune them in to the Journey of Hope with Rodney Mathers. And here we are at the end of another program. I want to thank my special guest today, Craig Wiener. And I want to remind you that if God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on the Journey of Hope.